Hola amigos, ¿qué tal? Stuart here from Spain Speaks with another weekly review video with Johnny. We'll check out what has caught Johnny's attention this week, so let's go to the video. All right, Johnny, how are you this week?
Good, Stu. A lot of hard work, both at work and on my channel and on my social media content. And it's growing nicely, so that's really good to see. How's it going for you?
Yeah, not too bad. Bit tired. It's been a long week, as most weeks are nowadays. Can't really do much getting into the routine. It's all very monotonous, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think it's harder to come back into it after a couple of days off for Easter as well. Well, maybe not on your side. I guess you maybe kept working, but you know, I had Thursday and Friday off because national holidays last week. So coming back into work on Monday, even though there wasn't too many people online, rest of Europe had their holiday on Monday.
Yeah.
So Monday was a pretty quiet day, but yeah. It's been a long week compared to the week we had last week.
Yeah, that's it. It's a bit of a difference in public holidays, especially even here in Spain. Some areas have a public holiday, some areas don't. So it gets a bit confusing. But yeah, people back to normal on Tuesday. But yeah, you're right. I didn't have any days off. I normally work. I work throughout. So yeah, but yeah, no, I can't complain. So what's on the talk list today?
Well, this week I got a letter from the Agencia Tributaria.
Okay.
And it reminded me that it is tax season. So my letter actually related to 2019. They were asking for some documentation. But given that we're now within the window that people can start making their tax declarations this year, I thought it might be a good time to talk a bit about tax, maybe about our experiences of tax, what are the changes, if any, that are taking place this year, and how the pandemic last year is impacting these tax declarations.
Yeah, the last thing you want is to get a letter from the tax department here, from the Agencia Tributaria. you want to try to avoid those letters if you can.
Yeah, they're a bit scary, and they're a bit intense in how they go about matters. I get the impression.
Well, they've got a lot of control, you see. If you are a registered taxpayer here, and you've got your NIE number, you're very controlled, even down to the last cent in your bank account, you know. And now there's a lot of new rules in place where you can't do big cash transactions. They're trying to cut down on those as well. They're also cracking down on people that are moving assets out of the country, and they have been for the last few years. And when it comes to foreigners, not necessarily yourself, Johnny, but people that have assets in different countries, they're keeping a close eye. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember reading actually, because I used to sometimes transfer money over from the UK, and I stopped doing that. Sometimes I would move. Not significant amounts, but amounts that are close to the limit where like a threshold is triggered, and they'd say, oh, look, this person has moved so much money. And that can sort of set off alarm bells, and maybe you will, maybe you won't get investigated by Hacienda. But yeah, I decided I'm just going to keep my UK cash in the UK for now, and everything I have here in Spain just where it is, just for the sake of avoiding problems with Hacienda.
Well, it's always the small fish. I'm not saying that you're a small fish, Johnny, but I mean, you're probably not in the high tax bracket in the country just yet. But you know, there are people that when you are a small fish, or if you're a middle class tax payer, which most of us are, I mean, we're the people that are under the most scrutiny, you know.
Yeah, and I think Hacienda are quite strict as well. They're not so forgiving if you make a mistake. Even if you try to rectify it, you can be penalized, is what I've read online as well.
Yeah, well, that's it. So the idea is to do things. But it's not easy, because do you do your own tax return?
No, so I've had help from an agency the past 2 years. I've tried to start learning about the tax code, and I'm getting the hang of it. Mm. But I'm really glad to have had help from professionals the past couple of years. It's definitely made it a lot easier for me, and probably for the viewers out there as well, who are maybe new to tax in Spain. It's definitely worth considering the help of a professional when you first have, you know, business or property in Spain, at least in the first instance. It definitely make things easier.
Yeah. Well, they tried to simplify it a few years ago. There's a program that they use called the, I don't know whether it's still called the same, but it used to be called the Programa Padre, which was supposed to be an easy program that people could do their own tax return online and get a quick return if they were getting money back or be able to pay if they owed. And but you know, the more assets you've got, the more complicated it becomes. If you've got, pension funds, you know, if you've got property, if you've got kids, all of those things can complicate things.
Yeah, like the notorious BIG said, more money, more problems.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't hear him say that, but probably that was the case, considering that those guys were in that high tax bracket echelon. That's it.
Yeah.
Making lots and lots of cash. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
Tax time. There's a window open for people to pay their taxes. I think it's a couple of months or maybe 3 months. I'm not sure how long it is. And the tax department gives you plenty of options. You can make an appointment to go to the local hacienda, or you can go to the main one in Madrid. And you know, they do give the people the facilities to do their tax fairly easily. And as you said before, there's lots of professionals that are willing to help you do it.
That's it. Yeah, I've got some of the key dates here. So the window is officially now open. It opened on the 7th of April. From early May, you can start to get telephone assistance. You can book your telephone assistance and receive it. From early June, you can start booking appointments in person. And then up until the end of June, so the 30th of June is the deadline to make your tax declaration to Hacienda.
Yeah, and with a bit of luck, if you've got money owed to you, you get it quickly.
Yeah, fingers crossed. I think I'm owed some money from 2019, because although I began working for a Spanish employer, I wasn't considered tax resident. That was the subject of my letter. So hopefully, we'll see that money soon.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Yeah. The best thing is when you do get some money back, it's a welcome relief, especially in these hard times that we have at the moment. That's it. But there is a bit of confusion this year as well, because a lot of people were forced into furlough schemes, or what they call here the ERTE scheme, which meant that they had two employers. And it means that a lot of people now have to put in an income tax declaration for possibly the first time.
Exactly, yeah. So the threshold for declaring tax in Spain is €22,000 gross. But if you have more than one, we call it payer of income in the tax year, and that second payer pays you more than €1,500, and the total is over €14,000 that you've received, then you do have to declare. And
you're obliged.
The ERTE does count as a second payer of income.
That's right. Well. And apparently the confusion is because they didn't retain any tax. There was no withholding tax on those payments. So that's where the problem is going to be for a lot of people that potentially owe up to, you know, over €1,000 potentially.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed that these people can, you know, get the help they need to fill out the tax. Hopefully it's not too difficult, and hopefully that tax burden's not too much, because as you say, it's difficult times right now.
It is, that's right. All right, good. What else is on the agenda, Johnny?
Yeah, so we've got the end of the state of alarm. So I know you've talked about it a bit on the channel. Pedro Sanchez has said he wants it to end on the 9th of May. You know, regional government, we'll not get into the politics, regional governments disputing, should we extend it? What do we do next? But what does it essentially mean for us? So I think once the state of alarm ends, you know, inter-community mobility can resume. There won't necessarily be nighttime curfews anymore. Of course, this all depends on the regional governments, but these measures that are in place right now are thanks to the state of alarm. So to maintain them would require the state of alarm to be prolonged, essentially.
Yeah, well, apparently that's what the autonomous communities are worried about. So the Prime Minister came out the other day, made one of his rare appearances. He's not a person that likes to front the press too often. He normally gets other people to do the speaking for him. And he mentioned two things. I think I mentioned this in today's video. One of them was that 70% of the population will be vaccinated by the end of summer, I think. And the other thing was that that the state of alarm, which is what we're talking about, that's right, will come to an end on the 9th. And that, of course, sent shockwaves around the country, because the autonomous communities don't know if they'll have the power to restrict people's movements, which is a fundamental thing. And also when it comes to the curfew, because remember that the curfews and all of these restrictions are in place because of that state of alarm, which gives that national coverage, and autonomous communities can tweak it a little bit. But one of the main questions, Johnny, is that a place like Madrid, for example, I'll say Madrid, or it could be any autonomous community that doesn't have its own police force, don't have the power to control the civil guard or the national police. So how are they going to stop people from moving around the country? Do you know what I mean? Unless that's the central government putting those restrictions in place. And if there's no state of alarm, anything goes.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for everyone. I know from speaking to some UK colleagues that UK people that live in the UK are desperate to get outside of the UK and travel. I would very much imagine it's the same for a lot of people in Madrid. I would include myself in that. Whether I will or not, and at what point I travel is another question. But yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if a lot of people from Madrid do start to move around if inter-community mobility then becomes available.
Yeah, and as we said last week or maybe the week before, the problem is that because the potential for people from a place like Madrid, which is 7 million people, to crowd places like Valencia now that the weather's starting to get better, to crowd places like Andalusia, to go to their villages at the weekend. And if the health situation is not under control, which I don't know what the figures are today, but apparently it's getting worse again. If the health situation is not under control, then that mobility could potentially be a problem. And as you said, people are desperate to travel.
Yeah, and this comes at a time of year as well, which is probably one of the best times of the year in Spain in terms of, you know, the weather's not too hot, it's springtime, the scenery really nice in Madrid both and around the country as well. So plenty of excuses for people to try and move around.
Yeah, you're right, because as soon as the spring finishes and summer begins, it just gets too hot. You know, you can't do things in the middle of the day, but at the moment you can. You know, you can go outside at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and it's not too hot. July, June, July, August, forget about that, you know. So it is a time when people do like to take advantage of the weather, yeah, and get around. So, the 9th of May could be that date when people are allowed to do that again, unless they come up with some other solution, which they could, yeah. So we'll wait and see what happens there. But anyway, it's going to be interesting because the state of alarm has been in place since at least 6 months now. So, and everybody has been under that state of alarm. All right, good. What was next, Johnny?
Can we actually go back to the tax thing? There was something else I wanted to mention that might be good for your viewers. So in spite of the pandemic last year, if anyone watching was maybe trapped in Spain as a result of the state of alarm, then you need to keep in mind that those days do still count towards whether you're a tax resident or not in Spain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this is what I've read online. I can send you the source if you want to double check it. But yeah, my understanding is that if you're trapped in Spain, then those days will count towards your tax residence.
Oh, really? Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah, so that could be an inconvenience for a lot of people.
So something to watch out for.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll keep that in mind. Okay, and the last thing, Johnny, was car sales, was it?
Yeah, so specifically used car sales. So used car sales are up and new car sales are down, which makes sense, of course. So used car sales are up 1.1% in the first quarter of this year versus last year, and that's about 450,000 vehicles. In March alone, it's up 65%, but if you take it versus 2019... for obvious reasons, of course, then it's up 5%. So there's still an increase in used vehicle sales. And then new vehicle sales are down 15% versus last year. Again, makes sense. We all know that the state of alarm came into effect in March last year. But again, the economic situation's changed and used cars may become a more viable solution for some people who are looking for a vehicle.
Maybe. Do you drive?
So I have a driver's license, but I don't need to drive. I stick to my 12-year-20 Metro card for the meantime. But yeah, if I was to get a car, though, I would probably go secondhand because I think new cars, this is talking from a financial perspective, of course, but a new car, it loses value the moment you drive it out the garage. So for me, it makes sense to try and get a decent secondhand car.
When
the time comes.
But having said that, for a lot of people, there's nothing like the sensation of driving a new car. I think people put that first before thinking about that depreciation of the asset, you know. Sorry.
What do you think? Because I read something on Quora once, and someone commented that their impression is that people in Spain like to buy new cars and just run them until they won't go no more. What do you think of that? Do you think it's has some truth to it.
Yeah, there's definitely not a second-hand car culture or a third-hand or a fourth-hand car culture like there is in perhaps in the UK or in Australia. I know it's quite common for people to buy an old vehicle for their first vehicle a lot of the times. I think that's less common here. I'm not going to say it doesn't exist. People love to have a new car, and they love to have that sensation because it's part of their image to be driving around in a nice set of wheels, you know. And there's not really a classic car culture here. I know that in Australia, again, you can, you know, quite often see old cars that have been done up cruising the streets, especially at the weekends. Again, here it does exist, but it's not. I don't think it's the same level. And so I think we are in a new car culture. I don't know whether people drive them until they break down. I think there is quite a, I'd say just by looking around that there is quite a high turnover because you don't see a lot of old vehicles on the streets. But it depends where you are. In Madrid, maybe it's different than if you're in a smaller city. You could still see a lot of older vehicles maybe in a smaller city. But definitely in Madrid, I tend to see a lot of relatively new vehicles driving around.
Yeah, that's been my observation as well. And the old vehicles I do see are very old vehicles, like at least 30 years old. So, yeah, not classic cars, but like if you think a film from the 70s or the 80s, the kind of cars that would appear in that. I've seen a couple rolling through the streets,
And my car's 10 years old now, and if I look at the other cars on the street, it's probably the oldest or the second oldest car parked on the street, you know. And because as I said, a lot of people are moving towards a concept here known as long-term renting. They rent a vehicle. The banks call it renting, you know, where you pay a monthly quota for 3 or 4 years and you have a certain amount of kilometres that you can drive every year. And a lot of people are switching to that model as well.
Yeah, I think in the US it's known as leasing, or in the UK as getting the car on finance. Which, if anyone knows the US finance guru Dave Ramsey, he's completely against that.
There's a difference because the car is never yours technically, you know. So I know that I think when you lease a vehicle, maybe you, at the end of the lease, because here they call it leasing and there's a renting and there's leasing. That's what the terms that the bank use. The renting, you have the option to buy at the end if you want to pay an extra amount of money, but normally you just give it back to the company. And they take care of it, and all of the services are included. So you don't have to pay for tire changes. You don't have to pay there's no insurance, so that's all included in the cost. The taxes are included as well. So a lot of people are moving to that model, and you get a new car technically every 4 years.
Okay, that's interesting to know. I know if there's any Spanish speakers, there was a YouTuber from Spain called El Frugalista, and he did his assessment on what's the best way to buy a car. And I think in the end, I think he went for this option that you've just talked about as well.
Yeah, well, there are lots of YouTube channels that are putting that information out there. There's a couple of other car gurus here in Spain that are saying the same thing. It's a question of doing the maths, but I suppose if you're going to be forking out, because the main advantage here is that you don't have to lay out any cash, whereas you do if you have to buy a new car. There's no loan involved. All of the maintenance is taken care of in the price as well. Insurance, as I mentioned before. So those extra costs that you have when you buy a car are taken out of the equation, and you just pay that monthly quota. And a lot of people do that and get their hands on a new car every 4 years or when that rental contract is up.
Yeah, and I think in this guy's case as well, he wasn't a frequent driver. He would only use it for specific jobs that he had. So, yeah, I guess very circumstantial, but in his case it made sense. Yeah, maybe someone who drives more often than...
Yeah.
Buying is maybe a better option. But yeah, it's good to know about that option as well.
And there's another concept in cities like Madrid that you'll see a lot. They're like cars that you hire for minutes or hours. Have you seen those driving around, the car to go?
The city cars, ZITY.
Yeah, that's one. Yeah, it's like a car sharing. You just leave it on the side of the road and you open it up with an app and start driving it. And you, like I said, it's for minutes, basically. A lot of people are choosing that now in Madrid.
Yeah, it's like the car version of Lime scooters.
Similar, exactly right. Yeah. So a lot of people are probably deciding not to buy a new car when you've got those options available. Because if you want to go from A to B in a city like Madrid or Barcelona or another big city in Spain, why have the cost of having to look for a parking spot or pay for a parking garage or all of those extra costs? And then if you want to leave the city, just hire a longer-term rental.
Right, yeah. And then if you want to take it even one more step further, I think the company is called Acciona that has the motorbikes that you can do the same thing with as well.
That's
it.
And
that's probably even cheaper, yeah.
That's right. Well, you've got that type of little scooter motorbike. You've got the push scooters. You've got the car sharing. So, I mean, there are a lot of options that are pushing people away from investing in new cars, probably.
Yeah.
Could be. I don't know. But
yeah. In any case, this article seemed to say that this could be the sign of a recovery in the used car sector and perhaps in the economy as well.
Mm-hmm.
As more people try to buy these new cars, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's used it. Cars. Well, that's it because as you said that it is one of the signs of the economy. When car sales are up, it means people are spending money. That's it.
Right.
They've got confidence.
Yeah.
That's it. All right. Anything else, Johnny?
That's all I had for today, Stu.
All right. Great. So we'll wrap it up, and we'll be in contact for next week.
Brilliant.
All right. Have a good one. See you later.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. Bye. So there we go. That was the weekly review video. Questions and comments, please leave them in the section below. Debate the situation out as you normally do. Give the video a thumbs up if you liked it, thumbs down if you didn't. We'll see you in the next one. Hasta luego.